All right, well, there we go. So welcome to Journeys with JP. And tonight my guest is Andrew Bartis, and we're off the air on Revolution Radio, but we are on the air on Never Beyond and Wolf Spirit Radio. And we've been having fun because there's no commercials, just a little bit of my own music. So there you go. So I'd like to welcome you back. Andrew Bartis, how are you?
Good, good, good. We had a really fun conversation there with, Sean before.
So we did. And the whole idea about this being a reflection of 1930s Germany, I've always felt, I've felt this kind of build up, and it always felt like, the time of Cabaret, you know, Liza Minnelli's Cabaret film, depicted a period in Germany that, I first started with my German girlfriend. And I thought, maybe we had a past life. And I did some sort of investigating. I was like, oh yeah, we had a past life, but you were my boyfriend. And it was a whole different relationship. And then that got me into the whole gay Nazi thing, right? And I didn't realize that there were a bunch of Nazis who were really butch gays.
And yes, because they were in the trenches in World War I was the worst of the worst of the worst, and the military factions already then had their own gay organizations in it, much like Douglas Dietrich talks about. Mm. You know, that had been built into military factionalisms all throughout Europe long before World War I and World War II.
All right. And then there's also Femme Compink, which is the CCCC organization that literally handles the football of your American country.
Yep.
Thing, which is a lesbian organization run by women for women, and they're basically the Uhurus of military that everybody just ignores, but like is like listening to everybody. So they make the ideal spy.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably that Helga Wilhelm, who was the Uber secretary of the Glocker project, who was actually an American spy called Kitty Evans, if I remember, turns out to be one of these characters in Sean's book. And she becomes one of the original time-traveling Nazis.
Well, I can let you in on a little perspection.
Go ahead.
When you are a time traveler, and if you are using a specific form of physical time travel technology that has an esoteric basis to its fundamentals, you can die in a world. Let's say you time travel into a world, into a new timeline, and you die at 51 and you've been there 11 years. The next moment you wake up, you'll be back at the moment where you were originally going into a new timeline, or just before you were timelined in, without a life review. This is where false light technology allowed them to create these super time travelers who didn't know what time frequencies they were going to and also didn't know what changes they were making.
Keep going.
This was employed at thousands and thousands and thousands of individual personalities, seeding time with real missions and false missions. So millions of remote viewers spread throughout our history would never truly know the moods of the different time traveling organizations.
Keep going.
So everything leads to what happens between 2011 and 2014. That's when we entered the very edge of the galactic central plane. That, you know, if the plane is just a line, the line has a certain thickness to it. Okay, 2011 to 2014.
We started to sizzle
and we entered the line. We're still inside the line right now, but part of our solar system is outside of it. I contend there are 66 planets in our solar system, and right now 33 of them are in front of already out of the line, and us, we're still stuck in it, going through the last of what is actually going to be imprinted upon us from the millions of years of time travel confusion and camouflage that's gone on.
So are you saying it's like we're going through a great big coffee filter and we're coming out pure?
Good way to put it, yes.
I do like to word things simply. Actually, what it felt like is more of a wire net, more like a mesh net than a filter. So it allows things of a certain thing to pass through, so that like little fish, allowing the little fish to pass through, to, so they can evolve again.
It's more of a compression concept, trying to get the avatar souls here to finish the absorbing their soul shard parts that got separated through millions of years of time travel confusion.
Ah, now, I remember a while ago you said something about I had some soul shards that were lost in the void. Yep. And I've been thinking about this, and I'm getting the idea that in the same way that this is what ghosts are, aren't they? But in a particular place because of a particular, and is that, are they in the void because of black magic that I've been sent, like, you know, bits of me have been sent there, thrown there?
Both. Some via black magic that you intentionally did, so a part of you would be in the void that is also being fed by the living version of you who is feeding the void itself, because the void's outside of time. It's a way to leapfrog through time. And they missed a window of opportunity to get inside you when you had your motorcycle accident and you came back in fully sovereign.
Yeah, I did have a sense of bugger this for a game of soldiers, and you know, very much like feeling much more on the ground about things and not being swayed by ideas.
Right. And those swayed ideas that you're using as a perception are how esoteric practitioners of your ancient past who had identified your signature IN being in a frequency of time and began remote influencing it.
Those pesky old sorcerers.
That's right.
We must get the fly swatter out.
They're the ones that always stand under our nose.
They're just itchy. You know, they send midges in. They're like remote influencing midgie guns, and you can see it like floating. Because a midgie is really tiny, right? So imagine, in order to cross a room, it must be like, you know, going from London to New York. And this remote thing, there's the back of his bald head, going and remote round. Oh, there's his eye. Right in the middle. Yeah, chemicals. Yeah. Ah, you little bastard. So.
Yeah. And then there's the more refined remote influencers. Mm-hmm. Who sneak up on you just as you're about to do an impressive word, and they land in such a way that you flub the line and people don't get what you're actually trying to say.
Yeah, well, that happens all the time. I thought that was just me. All right.
No. That's remote influencing of the midges and flies.
Is it? I better get that bloody tinfoil hat on. Maybe I should wear copper rather than tinfoil. I've got a meter of copper foil, copper strip. I could actually make a copper headband, a copper hat. That might be interesting. Anyway.
You need to make like a little, you know, those old 1950s hair dryers that's more like a Faraday cage for your head.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I might work on this. It might end up a little like a medieval helmet, the way it's got.
Well, include the radio microphone in it, so it's a part of it.
Why
too.
Not?
So you're,
why not? You microelectronics. Like and it, yeah. It has its own inner Faraday cage, so I'm protected from my own microelectronics as well as
there
other people's influence. Or how about this? That it creates a small local field that can't be penetrated because it's emitting and it cannot be penetrated because you can't dive into a fountain.
You could build it out of a copper tubing and fill that copper tubing with crystal and put resin in it, or mm-hmm. beeswax if you wanted to put it under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So copper, beeswax, crystals, compression, and a copper structure around yourself.
So an organite pipe that wraps around it. That would be interesting. And maybe I could have a little drinks fountain.
That's your galactic broadcaster.
Yeah. Well, maybe
broadcasting on a million timelines and dimensions.
That's
JP.
Right. Broadcasting across timelines and dimensions.
Truly ever beyond now.
Yeah. I've heard we're big in Alpha Centauri. Yeah. But so anyway.
Who are your Alpha Centauri sponsors?
Yeah, that's right. Well, can I interest you? Hey. wouldn't it? This is the thing, you know, like we got eBay these days and you can, from eBay, you can directly talk to a manufacturer in China and get a whole bunch of USB sticks for like dirt cheap. All sorts of things. You can deal directly.
Right.
What about dealing, having the same thing, but on a sort of interplanetary scale? I'm sure it must exist.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And yes, it does. There must be some kind of Google, some sort of Chromebook device that you can tap into this network with, yeah?
Well, it all comes down to the new way of exchanging honors. Dollar bills will no longer be linked to the Babylonian money curse. That means we can create infinite energy and exchange it, because an IM has a lifespan, and that lifespan has phases where it can create large volumes of information, and that it can be stored into data crystals or its own consciousness, and then that consciousness can create energy with those thought structures, much like a over-unity device. And then after a while, if that have enough power in there, much like Tesla, you can transcend dimensions and time streams, and then have access to direct manifestation technology. And once you have direct manifestation technology, economies as we know it cease to exist, because you no longer need the commodities to support the economy.
Nobody's in a state of need, because everything's in a state of abundance, and there's no sense of lack or loss, and that is what creates war and famine and disease and all these things.
Correct. And then after a while of climatizing to that, there will be a galactic market of other beings who have had extended moments of hyper-creation that they're passing on to their lineage. And this is where people become highly motivated and say, hey, I want to build a vessel that does this, this, and this. I want to build a city. I want to do something that says I'm leaving a legacy with this unlimited knowledge and consciousness I have. And then they come together in groups and combine the different packages of knowledge and wisdom, and then they begin trading with other solar systems, consciousness creations.
Awesome. It's like somebody taking all of Jimi Hendrix's record collection and making all sorts of movies and stuff out of it. Yeah.
Right? Or food is another big thing, where you take the food of a world and you try to combine the best dishes and the gastro expressions in it, and then download it into a, you know, food replicator, so that other beings, when they go to eat the protein base of whatever it is, it isn't poisonous to them, and we transmit the actual light experience through taste.
Oh, right. So I'll have an Altarian donkey burger, if that's all right by you.
Right. Or you want to try good old-fashioned human tripe.
Oh. Yeah, apparently on Planet Chicken, Jewish mother soup is big.
That's good.
It came a couple of years ago. It was Christmas time at my girlfriend's, and she had a duck. And to me, somehow, a duck is slightly more human than a chicken. And I remember, she said, "And now your carbs are chicken." I was like, "Okay, I don't really like this. I'm a bit uncomfortable." Anyway, so I'm really good at carving. I'm a good cook myself, so I carved it all up. And then there's a photo of me taking this. And then I had this weird kind of Far Side kind of moment, where I was, you know, talking with, in the future, I'm talking with a representative of the duck planet, and he's looking through my Facebook photographs, and it's like, and they go, "Oh yeah, what are you doing there?" And so, "Yeah, that's Christmas." And, "Yeah, what's that?" And, "You have this thing." "Hey, look at this. We got some really good presents that year." Awkward moments. Awkward space moments. 234. Oh, yeah. So I make myself laugh. Anyway. We're looking at just about every creature on this planet has a kind of evolved version. And then I'm thinking, I was talking with a friend of mine, she's talking about becoming very empathic with everything, and I'm like getting empathic with flies and stuff, and like, "Hello," and certainly with my chickens, and it's really nice, because it's such a lovely thing. You know, I open the front door and they come running up to the house, because they know they're going to get some food, but the way they do it is so appealing, you know, little chickens, the way they sort of waddle across and they do it really fast. And it's like a little, cartoon. And, they love to, peck the food out of my hand. Yeah, I can't quite touch them yet, but they're getting into it. So.
You will become a chicken whisperer soon.
Well, here's the thing. And, all right. So more than soon. So the other, few months ago, I was cleaning out the coop and there she was, and I was really grumpy with her because she wouldn't get out of the coop. And, pulled her out and, you know, and she was so, I pulled her out, put her on the floor, and she, you know, jumped up and run back in the coop and sat back where she was, you know, the way they do. And we were having this kind of, and I just that started thinking, I was just like having an imaginary conversation with her. And suddenly I got this real strong, connection that is like, you know, don't treat me like this. I'm royalty. I am the creator of the egg, the holy egg. their blessed royalty. They're in their world, the hen is the giver, the mother of all things and the giver of the great egg and the source of all things. And, you know, I was getting all this. Oh my God, this is a reptilian lifestyle. This is a reptilian.
No. Yeah. It was trying to transmit something to you from higher frequency. All life is sacred, and when humans oftentimes takes life in hens, as do other animal species too, even if we perceive their life as being chicken wings or drums, doesn't matter to them. Their life is the egg. Having 1 second that it's an actual egg means it's life in it. And if that life only lives 1 second, it has lived here and has gotten frequency of time and could be considered an ancestor for future generations.
And here's a thing that I've also noticed is that the moment you pay individual attention to one individual creature, that creature becomes individuated. And so that's how evolution starts, isn't it, Andrew?
They have a herd mentality.
Yes, most of the time. But when you pay attention to one of them, they then start getting a kind of that next level of consciousness.
They do, because that is the herd mentality trying to improve itself as a consciousness that's creating powerful eggs with souls in it that might be used for something. Even if the soul was only in the egg for a week and then gets transferred into a human body a week later. There is always this life and death process going on, and anything that is seed laying or egg laying is a part of the potential of what is born and dies every day. There's an equal balance. Whatever is, you know, brought in, something equal comes out. And there is migration patterns in those who have, you know, their passport to come in now and a visa to come in now, and those that don't. And those that don't can live in eggs to learn what it's actually like here in our physical space.
So, They learn from you,
and when they take on the consciousness imprint, it is affecting the whole frequency of all future life that's going to be in potential sharing space with them.
So it becomes a potential for a higher dimensional, a higher consciousness chicken, at least.
Correct.
And perhaps one that is a little less, and the thing that you notice about chickens, the first thing is this thing that they call the pecking order, the hierarchy and all of that. And I see how they suffer, and they make each other suffer, you know, to keep the whole pecking order in order. And you know, it's only been 2 years now. It's just kind of settled down, and they all know where they are now. It's taken a long time.
And then after a while, you know, you'll have the great mother hen, which will, you know, emanate the goddess energy, and then she'll pass it on to another and pass on.
That's right, and one day. One day in the future, this creature will evolve onto a planet where it will eventually develop space and time travel and come back and visit us and say...
Or it is already doing that.
That's right. And they're the blue aliens.
The only way it couldn't change our time is if it was a chicken. It took on a pecking order. But all it needed to do was perceive us through that to understand who we were. How we treat our animals is very reflective of where our species is at right now.
Oh, yeah. Talk about that, Andrew.
Well, you look at, you know, our food industry, it's, you know, hasn't had any major reforms since the 70s. And those major reforms were corrupted as hell. At the time, the mafia owned most of the beef industry. Now it's a corporate mafia that owns the beef industry and the FDA and the World Drug Administration, et cetera, et cetera. Hormones, all of that other stuff. So the animals are treated foully. They are no really natural, you know, a cow isn't a cow. It doesn't know how to be a baby cow. It's put into a pen right away and separated and doesn't have any of its natural instincts to come through. The individual beings that are in the cow know this and they're still here to live a purpose. It isn't about the lifestyle. It's about them being in, but we as how we treat them. Are they consciousness? We don't see a cow as consciousness. We don't see a fish as consciousness. We don't see a fruit tree as consciousness or a head of lettuce as consciousness. It is. It's a matter of how evolved is it? Is it? Is that consciousness part of the background of the planet that's offering its consciousness as abundant manifestation for us to consume?
That's very interesting. It's odd that you say that, you know, we don't see cows. I actually do, on a real-time level, interact with cows in the next field who are, well, they're bullets.
Same here.
Yeah.
Same here.
And it really does bring it home. And I feel less inclined to have steak or anything like that. And it just feels so heavy. It feels like just even like thinking about having some, it's like, oh no, maybe not.
Have you ever had Kobe beef or some of the other high-end massaged beef? Those are happy cows.
Happy cows.
Oh yeah, they massage sake into it every day for 15 years and then they sell it for like $550 a pound.
All right. Okay. Thanks. Good idea.
But
I do have friends who keep sheep and pigs and stuff. And when they do the slaughtering, they share it out and I often get some of that. And I do like, you know, it doesn't matter what creature it is, as long as it's kept happy. It's good to, and it's good to honor. And, I say thank you to every fish that I eat and, recognize it as a swimming living creature at some point. And its poor little things frozen and love you. Thank you. And it's important to honor all the food that you eat and to realize where it comes from and who processes it and the hands that it passes through and bless all those all the way back as well.
So. And then understand when that animal does die, it has a life review. And in that life review, it gets to experience everything that's brought it to market up until the point that we eat it. It's in our intestinal tract and it goes out. And what it's able to do in its life review is to see why we ate the food, what fuel it gave us, greater levels of consciousness it gave us, so that when it finishes its life review, it can take all of that cumulative data of being eaten and going to the commodities market so that it can figure out what kind of soul frequency it wants to be. Is it ready to advance to the next layer of consciousness that has to live in a world that does that with other consciousness?
Holy cow. Indeed.
Literally, holy cow.
Yeah. And I've been having this rather disturbing series of thoughts this week about the consequences of the Lyran attack and all of that. And, which has brought me to the idea that, you know, the Pleiadians and the Reptilians have been making mincemeat of each other for a billion years. And like, it's just got to stop.
So do you see the Pleiadians as good guys, bad guys, neutral guys? What is your perception of them?
Now?
Yeah.
Tired. Hurting. And, always hurting. And I believe that they, well, if my feelings, my personal feelings, which I believe is the personal feeling of one Pleiadian, one Lyran who became a Pleiadian, the feeling is of tremendous loss, and a tremendous grief that was masked and never dealt with, which then became into a cold rage that turned these Lyrans essentially into reptilians. And we became just like them. We slaughtered and burned and genocided. Just as they slaughtered and burned and genocided us. And it was just like animals. We became the animals that we were.
I contend technically we started it.
Who's we?
54 million years ago when we started the Galactic Ascension Machine and we're trying to resolve all time travel genocide wars that were in existence, because it wasn't just about the Lyrians and the Pleiadians and the Arcturians and all the other ones that were nefariously using time against consciousness in other worlds, because they were all in this pecking order and hierarchical challenge of who could tame feral consciousness in different nebulas and spiritually migrate it to worlds that were created that were being run by artificial intelligences and false light so that they could raise consciousness and prove to the universe that they were the masters of creation. And they were using timeline wars to try to erase DNA lineages or light body lineages from being able to migrate to one side of the universe to the other. And this created what I call an uncreational event. And then the remaining beings that were a part of the universal creational event that needed to resolve the universal laws that were abused by time travel, by founder beings and such, et cetera, that were in this competition to create consciousness. Well, during that uncreational event, everything that was entwined with time and the abuse of karma and how it's passed on from one generation to another, that was all encapsulated into a single concept, and those are the 66 main planets that created timeline genocides and were erasing lineages all around the universe, was encapsulated here, and anything that lost its experience based off of that migrated to this little bubble of an ascension machine so that time would no longer be the fundamental expression of how they gained their experiences back. They could do it outside of time or leapfrogging through time. And Earth was the prime planet to be able to do that because it had its naturally functioning three timelines. An astral timeline, which determined how galactic time would transfer migrations from one part of the universe to another or one galaxy to another, so created massive epochs of time, and what basically had its landing date and immigration date to be a living being on Earth, preordained by Earth, the consciousness itself, so through the subsidies of the solar system, and then direct manifestation or traveling to there and dying there, which then created ancestors. You then have the surface timeline, which is our graduation timeline, and our hollow Earth timeline, which is everything that's in extinction that is also holding ancestral space for other migration groups coming from other great distances.
It's like a seed pattern.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And how does that connect with, do crop circles connect with the hollow earth? Are they just an effect of something that's coming through the land, through the ground to the hollow earth?
I have two perspectives to bring. One, that it is an off-world source using photonic light technology to imprint symbology into the surface of a nexus point. And then the very consciousness of Earth itself creates a series of symbols back that make the final manifestation of what the crop circle is. It's a form of celestial Ouija boarding.
Celestial Ouija board, I like that.
Very ancient, and it's a way for manifest beings to cut through the bullshit and actually communicate with the planet. It's a refined science in many, many worlds.
So, yeah. That's very interesting. So, now a lot of people are...
Then there are other versions, which is...
Yeah, please.
You know, again, it's like a Ouija board, you know, shit can come in that's not meant to, but some versions of that is, it is so dirty by intention, because then that dirties up the timeline over there and allows them to do functions in that area.
Okay, I just want to address the chat room. I don't like cursing. It's a genteel place. It's not like a biker's bar. So please refrain or you will be banned immediately. Thank you. All right. So, meanwhile... Oh, God, no cursing. So I'm trying to type and think and hear what you're saying. No cursing. Right, okay. Now, they will get this. Well, it's been a very interesting night so far. Crop circles, that's where we were. Yes. So where I went in 1993, I think I found the crop circle by the side of the road. And it was, you know, they're like a perfect cookie cutter. The edges are sharp. The real ones, the edges are really sharp. And the stalks are softly bent over. They're not broken, like they are when somebody stomps them down. I wrote a little essay about that a few years ago, but really, it's just like making walking sticks. You know, you make a walking cane and you boil the bamboo and it becomes soft and you can bend it around in a curve and you let it cool down and dry out and it stays curved. So that's what's going on in the crop circles. But, you know, so what that means to me is like it can be, burned in using microwaves because they find that the ground underneath is dry. The water underneath is gone. And, what I'm surmising is that it's a microwave beam that's just boiling the water just beneath the soil. That's creating a steam that's letting the stalks bend over but not break. And then it swirls around and creates the harmonic.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So there are other expressions of,
please,
we'll call it celestial Ouija boarding, where the intention is to connect to a different form of the consciousness of the planet, a much younger or much older version of it. So this is celestial esoterica, where you may have had a collection where you may have gone to 5 or 6,000 worlds over, you know, a few hundred years of exploration of the universe, and you've made a series of planetary sigils, and you can become what I call a planetary mailman and delivery service of high frequencies of energies.
I see, because this is very much similar to the idea of taking artifacts and relics on pilgrimages. Everything takes an impression. You know, if I meet somebody, if I go somewhere, or if I touch something, each of those will hold my energy, and even psychometrists can read somebody's wristwatch and tell you the personality of somebody. That's quite a basic one, but that's reading the impression that an object was impressed by. So how far does that go?
Very far. So we could use our existing concept of what ley lines are and have some context behind it. The maps that we believe and create ley lines are based off of the cardinal points of our stars, which is astroarchaeology that's very ancient, that's been imprinted to us, based off of where our celestial temples are, the pyramids, Stonehenge, etc., etc. That is also an imprint that isn't our natural ley lines and nexus lines. So there are those that go and communicate to the place that isn't the fake grid. Our consciousness is empowering a currently fake grid or a sacred geometry grid that is based in the exchange of debt between nation states. This is the Babylonian money curse that's keeping this world to a single frequency of time. So you can go to places in the world which don't have lots of consciousness observing it, interacting with the Babylonian money curse, and create these master sigil surfaces on the surface and have an ancestral hollow earth connection come and add to the frequency, which is other beings in extinction who may want to export some of their light off of this world and make a return trip in a light vessel to something else in the mailman's line.
So we can carry these impressions with us.
Yes.
So we might meet so and so and so and so, and they literally teleport through through conversation on the other side. Yeah.
Yes.
So, for instance, I might in a past life have spoken to, let's say Nikola Tesla, and so if I call up that relationship and speak to you, then I can convey Nikola Tesla's energy, and therefore you can tune into him and query his consciousness at any time you like.
Yes.
God, it's like heroes. Okay.
Yes. it's a matter of understanding the signature frequency time of the I am being.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the time. All right, so we're talking about like a kind of IP address, but you're talking about it's an
a light IP. Think of it. Yeah. So you'll use technical, like a light IP address. Yes,
And it's
so
a coordinate in time and space. Go ahead.
It was 1900 to 1933. We'll just call it a static point in time where it was a four color time. Anything past that would be a seven color time, meaning consciousness had been raised enough consciousness was killed off, went through life reviews, and then was born back into the system that it raised the consciousness of beings.
Beings being what the
1900 to 1933. So that would have been a light IP frequency of time. So if you knew 1900 to 1933 was red, brown, and green, okay, that means you would use your remote viewing lenses to observe red, brown, and green mostly, because the majority of the world would be operating in red, brown, and green. Anything after 1933 would have been a seven color time, and you would have need to use your remote viewing esoteric practices to observe all seven layers of the human auric frequency to know what was going on in the seen and unseen world of the being you're observing.
So you then have a seven color coordinate, and it's like, almost like a combination lock using color?
Yep, exactly.
Bing! IP. So how many?
So there are two frequencies of time in our 117, 16 years that we've got going right now. So we go from the three color experiencing time to seven color experiencing time to anything past 2016, the potential of eight color time. The handful of consciousness explorers creating the new color and giving a colloquial manifestation in the words that the rest of the population will give labels and agendas and protocols to.
Okay, so let me just unpick that very generically phrased, that there's a new color, and is that color, my friend used to call it magenta.
It's a synthesis of consciousness in the seen and the unseen world. It is only observed by the six senses, which is all five senses combined into consciousness that knows it is a sovereign being in reality. So the sovereignty itself determines how high of frequency this eight colors can be. So there are some that only experience it in the dream and can't bring it into the other world. There are enough that just get enough of it that they come out of the dream world able to remember, 2-3 hours of the dream or just 5-6 minutes of it. That is representing the actual mound of voltage behind what you took in. Trying to give terminology we can all do. We call it polarity or charge. You took a charge in that will last for a certain amount of inhuman hours or time frequency. After a while, people will begin to experience more of the eighth color time, not just in their dream world, but in deja vu moments and other moments is what I call global dream time awakening, where there is a sense of communion among people. We all look and kind of have this deja vu moment to each other for a microsecond. And that is where both the side of the planet that's facing the sun and the side of the planet that's not facing the sun, the light and the dark, where our dream world synthesize with the real world, creating the eighth color. In physicality.
Wow. So I believe that this is really starting to manifest right now, it's really hitting the ground like this week kind of thing, isn't it, Andrew? I'm really feeling the veil of not feeling things anymore. It's like the veil has lifted and nobody's noticed.
This is what I said on July the 16th. I said, today is day one, page one of the book of make sure you have your popcorn out because something weird's about to happen. It may be a trilogy. It may be a 1,000-page book, but it is day one, page one. It has been written, set in stone. Yes, I believe that we are on a path of a consciousness awakening and that 2 days ago was one of those game changers that everyone's trying to really understand what this change in rule means and the potentials of plays that come from it.
So this
and then there's beings like us. Well, what do? We out-create the system now.
So this is the like it was that the 16th of the 7th of the of 16? So again, 777 on a subtle way. An encoded 77 rather than the blatant 777, which something else happened that day. But there was another harmonic that day as well. Do you remember the 7th? 7th of July.
The 7th of July?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
It was a rather, it seemed to be a rather intense version of what we're talking about. Like a big bloop that it all started to kick off.
That's when I was looking, I was doing lots of ritual and ceremony on the lead up to that, because I had a series of things go on in my life that I just had to, you know, mentally take care of, business take care of, spiritually take care of, because there was just this assault on all levels of to get stuff done.
Yeah.
That had been going on for weeks.
Yeah, it was like,
and I began
getting
to
tidy.
Notice, like, yeah, it get tidy, and then I'm like, something's happening here. And on the 7th, I'm like in my ritual, and I'm like, and I'm doing all my stuff and in the flow, and I was wowing my own self. And it was like I had contracted myself to like have that self-testing experience. And then on the 16th, it was, all right, it's on, like Donkey Kong.
Or whack-a-mole. But it was quite a, you're right. I felt, and it's really funny because I had to tidy my house and organize my house and get everything, you know, in order by that day. It felt like. And then.
Yeah.
Everything's gone to hell since then. And it's time, I can tidy up again tomorrow. You know, it's like, whew. But there's these like 7 to 10 day periods of like intense fantasy, and then there's like about 3 or 4 days of like, oh, what the crap just happened? Oh my god, here's another one. It's just like, and then we go for another one. Oh, here we go. We're getting good at riding the wave, I think.
I call those spikes in consciousness. Where the earth itself goes through what I call a yawning phase, where it's beginning to expand more of its consciousness to those that are ready to pay attention to and work with it and take the abundance energy as an offering and physically do something with it, whether it's thinking, creating, artwork, music, etc., whatever it is, it's giving you this abundant energy. And these spikes in consciousness, you know, are affecting the variety of people in awakened and unawakened states to find their true potentials, to find what motivation and inspiration means, to let go of the system of domination and control and out-create in front of you with the power of love. I mean, hell, you know the power of one song to transit one generation to another. We are one love song away from the year 2016 having a potential of creating a love frequency in 2027 that crosses the generations that have yet to been created yet.
Well, exactly. And this is what I'm feeling, that almost everything that we've been talking about for the last few years, everything that I've been learning for the last 30, 40 years, everything that happened since my bike crash and that wake me up and get me to here, everything is preparing for this week. This is the, to me, this is the time of the crossing. And there's probably some, astronomical things that are going on at the same time. What do you think, Andrew?
I agree, because our ridiculous American corporate political system is showing the worst of the worst of the worst, trying to stop people from paying attention to what's going around them so that they follow the party line. And as above, so below, that it is so disastrous for them now, because their corruption has gone so far that people are walking away in droves.
Yeah.
Turning off the television and turning on things like Wolf Spirit Radio or my show or your show or somebody else's, doesn't matter who it is. And they're looking for an alternate source of entertainment that isn't ultimately disempowering for them.
Exactly. Something that actually builds people up instead of knocks people down. This is the whole thing. It's just like Roman gladiators, like watching people hack each other to bits. It's just like sick.
And we can out-create that.
Well, this is what, you know, we are creating this. This is what we're doing right now, isn't it? We're
right
creating a series of spaces where the possibility for a better future can allow itself to form without being hacked to pieces, or are polluted in ways that are debasing to the divinity of all Lyran descendants, of everybody. But to see, everybody's source connection gives them an equal right in this place. And it's, this guy's just a kid from Bethnal Green who likes bagels and stuff. So, he has to be retrained to be kind to the chickens and not to want to strangle Roger sometimes. But anyway, long story. He's
Roger,
funny. My cock.
Your cock.
Yeah, I chase him around. I got a special stick that's got a kind of curve at the end so he can be brought down with it. Cause he chases me and attacks me. It's like, Kato in Peter Sellers films, He chases and attacks me when I'm carrying wood in my hands, and he's all claws. He's mean, really mean, but he's very heavy footed. So you hear this kind of coming up behind you. So he's not very stealthy. He's just like really clumsy. It's kind of funny. Anyway, I haven't been lacerated quite yet, but they are quite mean claws he's got. So, I keep my distance with a sort of shepherd sort of stick.
So why do you have the rooster? Doesn't that risk your eggs going a little foul? ha 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 ha. Words.
But they're all rescue. They're all they're rescue waifs and, the first two that I got were being bullied. So my friend said, all right, do you want to take these chickens? And I said, okay, yeah, I'll take them off your hand. Well, that'll be £15. And, oh, right. Okay. All right. So I rescued them and I made them a coop and I got my little chicken thing. And then I had, neighbors, who had another set of hens, and these hens used to come over and all the time. So I used to have four hens, and I used to feed them all. Then the neighbors went away and one of the chickens went, and it's, there's one left. And so I've got that one. Then they were all squabbling and everything. And somebody said, oh, look, there's another, I've got a rooster. Can anyone house a rooster? I've got a rescue rooster. So, all right. Okay. So that's where Roger came in. So they're a little company of rescues and strandeds and waifs. And it's a little chicken village, they all live in a house, and, they're completely, utterly they're unvaccinated, completely free range. He crows all the time, and they make lovely eggs. They're very lovely. So I thank them all day. They're broody. They're mean. They don't. Yeah, they're funny things. They're funny things, chickens.
So how big of a pen do you have for them?
It's quite it's quite spacious enough for them. It's about 2x3x3 kind of thing.
Okay.
With a lid and it's all on my Facebook. You can see them all. My construction, my buck house that I made for them. Like I said, I've been learning about reptilian society, by looking at how they work.
All through the chicken.
Yeah, all through the chicken.
See, they are great teachers.
That's all right. That's right. And they give you eggs. And,
yes.
And the other thing is that, first of all, when I first got them, they, you give them this special organic feed. All right, good idea. So it cost me, dozens and dozens. And I discovered that my farmer, the farm that whose land I live on, actually grows barley for the whiskey industry. So yep. He's got an abundance of barley. And one day I didn't have any feed left, and I had, I never eat the barley in the cupboard. So I got to open the thing and threw the barley on the ground. They went absolutely crazy for the barley. They love the barley. All right. Okay. So I asked the farmer. So now I've got a very easy economy is that I pay a very little price for absolutely brand spanking fresh barley from the field. And, it's like cost nothing, £5 for 3 months worth. So it's, I'm really, yeah. So I have a nice little economy with my eggs, and that's my
economy.
Economy. Boom, boom. So Andy, you've been at it for nearly 3 hours. Thank you so much for coming on with me. It's been a strange night, Rev Radio down. The chat room has gone absolutely crazy. All these weird people came in and started swearing, and we don't like that. We're rather genteel here. Yeah, this is not a biker's bar. This is a, we have grannies here.
It's not a biker's bar, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, thank you so much. What's your website, Andy? And you know, have you got any books coming out? Or you've got some video series, haven't you?
Yeah, do some pluggage. Yeah. So you can go to my website, andrewbartz.com. It's BARTZIS.com. It was my first name, Andrew, ANDRW. And there you can see a new video series I'm doing titled Living the Mystical Life Daily. All you got to do is drop your email address in and you'll get two videos and a bunch of other downloads on Living the Mystical Life Daily, which then leads to an event September 3rd and the 4th. Where I'll be teaching people how to read the Akashic Records, very similar in the way that I do, where I'll be teaching the fundamental protocols of the Akashic Records, or how to remain sacred neutral to information, and then how to, you know, send healing treatments forward and backwards in time to yourself. As well as being touching on the Galactic History series. It's going to be, you know, proverbially titled Galactic History 2, where I'll be going very in-depth to what our species history is, how it relates to founder beings, and what we can do as individual beings now to manifest and hyper-create in these times.
That sounds awesome. Is that really cheap? I know. If I manifest myself a penny 2 million years ago, I'll be able to afford it, won't I?
Well, that's interest.
Ba-doom.
Da-dum. Technically, the Babylonian money curse must honor it.
Oh, I see. Yeah, all right. Technically. I went compound interest on that one.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
You're a time collector.
That's right. A time space investor. And there's another market for you, you know.
Yes. The time. I am a time space investor.
Talk about futures. Yeah, the futures are going crazy. Yeah. So, loose futures going crazy with the whole truth movement going on at the moment. There's a kind of feeding frenzy going on, and I can see a great division, starting right now. And it's all deliberate,
It's all around Trump.
I'm talking about Max Spears.
Oh, what happened to Max Spears?
He's dead.
I didn't know. Oh, what happened?
Well, the story is that he was found in his flat. He's been dead for several hours, many hours.
Dead, wow. You
know, non-revivable. And who knows whether he, you know, and you know, of course people are saying, "Oh, well, I mean, okay. What's your immediate process with that? What are you hearing?"
Say that again.
When I said that, you know, what was your immediate response? Your immediate reaction to that in your head?
To Max Spears dying?
Yeah.
I thought that you know, it wasn't exactly. It was not bad. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that he had died, and when I instantly looked into the thought, it wasn't about a conspiracy industry. It was about, did the being of light cross over and have its life review? And he crossed over, had its life review, and it was a very positive revelation to it. So to me, it's not really about who did it or even if there was anything done to it. It was, what was the life review?
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Cause he,
again, I look differently.
Yeah. I always value your perspective. Most of the time I don't understand it, but I come back to it months later and I've reached a level of understanding that I can understand it. So I just allow it to happen. Cause I realize, you know, yeah, I've known you for several years now, and I remember the first time that you spoke, you was just kind of a wall of words that just didn't mean anything to me. And now if I go back to them, I can follow it in real time. And I think, oh wow. Yeah. He's on a frequency band there. That I wasn't able to keep up with, and now I'm able to keep up with, and hopefully my listeners and those of us who have been following this whole thing are up to speed. And if you're not up to speed, you know, just keep listening, because it's like it carves these new pathways, and the more you use these new pathways, the more easy it gets to use them, and the more easy it is to understand the level from which Andrew is talking about, because he takes it right out of where you are into why you are. And I can't even describe why is the word, you know, it's not why or who or where. How would you describe it, Andrew?
For me, it is each being's an experience. The experience. And you know, you can use, you know, music and stuff to relate to experience also, but the whole life is an experience, and I see everything as an experience, and it creates a density of color in a being. So when I see a being, I see their density of color. I know the age of the being, on world and off world. So again, my experience of experiencing the Akashic record about you as an individual being, as this current audience live, what will listen into the future and what will listen into the past. So there are all potentials right here and right now in this moment for me. So when I get asked questions, whether it's Sean or Lisa or you or whoever it is always from the perspective of me being aware of past, present, and future, that the broadcast is being recorded, is being on the internet, is creating a standing static frequency of no time as the individuated soul frequency that's here in this sacred neutral expression to bring a manifest forward colloquial now language that says, here, I define this as an experience, and this is the language that I use to express it.
Fantastic. And so, with that, I'm going to play a track that I called The New Normal to play us out with. No, this is The New New Normal. Maybe there's a new. See, there's the new normal. See, strange is the new normal, right? But the new normal is to the new normal what today's normal is, what strange is today's normal. So, that's the new normal, and that's where we're going. All right, thanks very much, everybody.